Yeah, thank you very much. Because this Beyond the Standard model of, workshop is going on in Santa Barbara, here we must include quantum gravity in a Beyond the Standard model, I believe. And basically, this three-quarter of this talk will be based on my recent work with Guy Gurari, who is a postdoc in Stanford, and Steve Schenker in Stanford, which will appear soon, hopefully. And I also give a short review about Euclidean simulation. Some of you might not know, but. So we use gauge gravity duality to learn about quantum gravity by using lattice method. This duality, which is still a conjecture, but there are plenty of evidence supporting it, claims that type 2A or 2B string around a certain black hole-like background, which is called black B-brain, is equivalent to certain maximally supersymmetric Young-Mills theory, which describes intuitively the B-brain and the strings. And by using this duality, by using lattice method, it's possible to study Young-Mills theory non-perturbatively. Then it should be possible to learn about black hole and quantum gravity. This is the basic idea. And this P is a spatial dimension, and it can be 3 or 2 or 1 or even 0. When P is 0, this is just a quantum mechanics, not even field theory. And that's a numerically easiest example. So this example is most well studied numerically. And today, mainly, I will talk about this model. And according to Maldacena and Itzhaki, Maldacena, Zoldenstein, Yankovic, this matrix quantum mechanics is equivalent, should be equivalent to type 2A string around black P brain, black zero brain background, which is a kind of black hole. And also, the same model was proposed as a matrix model of supermembrane by DeWitt, Hoppe, and Nicolai in 1988. And also as a matrix model of M theory by Banks, Fisher, Schenk, and Susskind. And in this context and this context, large n limits are different. In this case, they consider two-fifth limit where g squared times n is fixed. And in this case, they consider something like g squared fixed and n goes to infinity. And today we concentrate on this case, planar limit. And this is the action. In the Euclidean signature. So this is just a dimensional reduction of 10-dimensional n equals to 1 super Mills, or 4-dimensional n equals to 4 super Mills to just 0 plus 1 dimension. So we only have time. And there are 9 scalar fields, which intuitively describes position of the zero brain and the open strings stretched between them in 9-dimensional space. And we have the commutator squared interaction, which is in Young-Mills theory, in F mu nu, you have such commutator term of a gauge field. After dimensional reduction, that part survives. And we have fermions, which are super partner of bosonic field X. And C and X are n by n matrices. And this is two-fold coupling, lambda, which is g squared times n. And in four dimension, this is dimensionless. But in less than four dimension, this has dimension. And this part has dimension 4. Here we just have minus 1. So this lambda must carry dimension 3. And then when we measure any dimension full quantities, we should measure it in the unit of lambda. For example, when we have temperature, we can multiply lambda to the minus 1/3 to make it the dimensionless effective temperature. Then when we say low temperature, this T effect is small. When we say high temperature, this T effective is large. And high temperature and small lambda are the same, as you can see from here. So if we consider high temperature, for example, this corresponds to weak coupling. And as I will explain shortly, this corresponds to a very stringy setup. We have very large alpha prime correction. And for next slide is very trivial for string theorists, but maybe new, something new can be learned by Latin theorists, I think. This is the one paragraph from Marada Sena's very famous paper about ADS-CFT. And he said that by using this duality, in principle, we can use this duality to give a definition of M string theory, blah, blah, blah. And also he says the corresponding field theory can, in principle, be defined non-perturbatively. And when he wrote this paper, people don't know how to regularize super mu theory by using lattice method. But by now, thanks to the work by many people, including Marada Sena himself, we know how to regularize such theories. So we really know how to define such theory non-perturbatively, and we can really study on computer. And these people, Banks, Fischer, Schenker, Susskind, 1 year before Marada Sena's paper, wrote another famous paper, M-theory as a matrix model, a conjecture. And they say that their matrix model, which is a special kind of super M-U theory, can be something like a lattice in the case of QCD. In QCD, you can define the theory by using lattice. And they say their matrix model is a counterpart in string theory. And also they say practical utility of the lattice theory may be questioned, but it's conceptually very useful. But of course, this paper was written before this Berlin Wall collapsed. And by now we know that, this is the famous Berlin Wall in lattice community, which string theorists might not know. But the lattice people in this century completely broke this wall. And in QCD, lattice is really practically useful. And we can expect the same thing in string theory. So we apply lattice QCD-like method to study super-MU theory. And thermodynamics has been studied extensively, at least for 0 plus 1 and 1 plus 1 dimensional theories. And it's very successful so far. So this is the energy of the system at finite temperature, which should be identified to mass of the black hole as a function of Hawking temperature. So this temperature in gauge theory should be identified to Hawking temperature in black hole side. And this T is actually T effective, which is made dimensionless by multiplying lambda. And this E is also effective energy, dimensionless energy. And supergravity tells us that at the strong coupling, Yamil theory and supergravity should agree very well. And this is a mass of black hole calculated by supergravity. And this dotted line is a weak coupling expansion in gauge theory side. And these are the simulation result of the gauge theory. And it nicely interpolates between strong coupling, dual gravity prediction, and weak coupling, perturbative calculation in gauge theory. And if we zoom up here, finite T correction to supergravity should correspond to stringy correction. And this is the fit of the result by taking into account the stringy effect, and it works very well. For example, this leading supergravity term is a 7.4 times T to the 2.8. And this deviation should be T to the 4.6 if the duality is correct. And this difference really behaves like T to the 4.6. And also, this is an older simulation from 2008. Recently, Kado and Kamata did the same simulation by using different regularization method. And the result looks pretty similar, but at the low temperature region, there is a small deviation. And the coefficient of alpha prime correction disagree I forgot how much, it's 30% or something like that. So now we are doing, but in both cases, we didn't really take a continuum limit. And now we are really taking a continuum limit and also trying to go to much larger n to settle down this issue. And also, if you study 1 over n correction to the string theory, to the gauge theory, it should correspond to string loop correction in gravity side. And the dual gravity prediction to the leading term is this, minus 5.77 times t to the 0.4 divided by n squared, plus higher order in 1 over n. And we try to determine this quotient numerically by using n equal to 3, 4, and 5. And we plotted the quotient as a function of temperature. And this line is the dual gravity prediction, and they agree pretty well.
So the 5.77 is a fit?
No, that's analytic prediction. And the fit is very hard because this power, 0.4, is very close to constant. And so in order to go to further larger n and close to continuum, and also we want to study M-theory region or different theory, then we need a very big computational resource. And recently, people in Livermore lab are interested in this, doing this simulation. And by using their supercomputer and the computer supercomputer from RIKEN, we are doing a very large-scale simulation. Especially Evan Barkovitz and Enrico Rinaldi, who are postdoc in Livermore, are working very hard and learning very quickly. And at least in this year, at least we can report a continuum limit of the black zero brain mass in this plot. We can take continuum limit and we can go to larger n in this year, I think. And eventually we want to study many different and more interesting quantities, especially about M theory.
Exponent 2.8 and 0.4 are exact rational exponents.
Ah, yes, from gravity side. Yeah. That's exact.
Simple.
Using beta function, and so you can write it. I can explain later on blackboard. Without the reference, I will make a mistake. And also, in other context, Costa Skenderis was for a long time interested in doing cosmology using his own holographic cosmology model. And his colleagues and our friends in Livermore are interested in this, and we're doing gauge theory simulation in that context. And so if you have a similar or even more interesting idea in gauge gravity duality, if you are talk to me or these people, probably you can find a collaborator in gauge theory side. And I don't have time to explain Euclidean simulation further, but what we expect we can do in the coming 5-10 years is, first of all, we can do black hole thermodynamics in detail. And tomorrow, probably, David will talk about 4D super EML simulation. And then you can have many input to ADS5 shift-4 correspondence from lattice simulation. And also, by using the zero-brain quantum mechanics, by going to very, very strongly coupled region, it should be possible to learn about M theory. So matrix model of M theory appeared in 1996. And next year, that model will be 20 years old, so we should study it. And also, by using the same model, some people claim that six-dimensional superconformal theory, or six-dimensional n equals to 2-0 theory, should be described. And there are very rich web of dualities derived from this theory, so it's very interesting to really study this theory directly. And also, we may have application to cosmology, or related to this, we may be possible, it might be possible to find the gauge theory dual of two-zeta space, which should be very useful to learn about inflation, in early time inflation and late time inflation. And about this, so these are just topics which pops up in my mind last night. But here in UCSB, there are many good string theories, so you should ask more topics about. But you can attack by using lattice method. And this is the main part of my talk today. So I want to study real time. And one of the big one reason I have to study it is when I have shown a result of one point correction. That is very nice. And I have shown it to Joe Polchinski. It was 1-2 years ago. And he said, but you lattice guys can't study real time. And I want to know that in order to attack to real black hole information puzzle. And you know, it's a challenge, but we have to solve it. And of course, for quantum simulation of quantum field theory is very difficult. And many people are trying, but not successful so far. Maybe stochastic quantization can work. Maybe brute force diagonalization can work for small system. Well, maybe we can invent quantum simulator. And if we go to strong coupling limit of lattice gauge theory, then theory simplifies a lot. And it's still complicated, and it's full of lattice artifacts. But at least qualitatively, it can describe string theory. And I think we can solve this theory numerically in near future, in 2 or 3 years, I think. But still, it's challenging. And today, I talk about classical real-time evolution. But we just solved classical equation of motion. Today, I will talk about zero plus one, it's matrix quantum mechanics. And I will also mention a comment on 1 plus 1, 2 plus 1, and 3 plus 1 dimension, which QGP community, which is studied in QGP community. Yeah. And such classical picture is good at high temperature. And it's equivalent to weak coupling in the case of matrix model. And weak coupling is highly stringy region. And the equation of motion, I will show the equation of motion, but of course, all of you know, I think, it's highly nonlinear and non-perturbative. So it's weak coupling, but it's very nonlinear and non-perturbative physics. And the black hole, in that theory, is a soliton or resonance of a matrix model. I'll explain this point shortly. And we will see the formation and evaporation of a black hole. I put a quotation mark because it's actually related to black hole, but it's not really a black hole in weakly coupled gravity. It's very highly stringy black hole. Okay, but anyway, we study this black hole and see formation and evaporation. And in gauge gravity duality, in quantum field theory, often people say large M, strong coupling limit, or in our context, zero temperature limit, corresponds to classical gravity. And if you go to finite coupling, then string alpha prime correction appears. So alpha prime correction, alpha prime means the size of the string. And if we go to finite, then quantum string theory is a dual or in a gravity psi. And usually people say, OK, just by solving classical theory, we can learn about quantum field theory. It's a big bonus. But in this case, so classical theory describes weak coupling limit. So just by solving classical Yamil theory, we may have a chance to learn about quantum string theory. Because even already at weak coupling, we have parameter n. So we always have a huge alpha prime correction when we take lambda equals to zero limit. And by changing n, we may control GS. And so it might be a bonus. And so it can make sense to study classical limit of Yamil theory. This is what David Bernstein was emphasizing for several years, I think. And in a specific system of the black zero plane, which we will study, actually there is no phase transition between weak coupling high temperature region and the strong coupling low temperature region. Okay, so this is energy measured by gauge theory simulation. And this curve is a black hole mass calculated by supergravity. And around here, gauge theory really describes black hole in supergravity. And if we go to high temperature, of course, it's not the same as a supergravity black hole anymore. But see, there's no phase transition in between. And then smoothly, it goes close to classical Yamil theory. This red straight line is energy as a function of temperature in classical theory. And if we go to even high temperature, we can really see that it goes asymptotically close to classical result. So at least qualitatively, we can expect we will see something related to black hole. And I want to convince that it's a really interesting model. And in a standard interpretation of a matrix model, eigenvalue of matrices are the position of the zero planes. And of course, here I put quotation mark on eigenvalues because there are 9 matrices and they cannot be diagonalized simultaneously. So the situation we have in mind is we go close to simultaneously diagonal setup. But of course, there are small off-diagonal elements. Then in such basis, we interpret diagonal element to be the position of the zero planes. So we have 9 matrices. Okay, so we have 9 components for each coming from n. So it describes the distribution of n d planes in 9-dimensional space. And if off-diagonal element, ij component of off-diagonal part, describes open string stretched between ith d plane and jth d plane. And if off-diagonal element takes big value, we interpret that many open strings are exciting. And if all eigenvalues form come close and form a bound state, then of course there are a lot of off-diagonal element which describes open string are excited too. Then we can regard such bound state as black hole. And at very strongly coupled region, such a state really reproduced property of a black hole in supergravity.
Now the thermal distribution here is not stable, right? And at finite temperature.
At finite temperature, actually, still in a, with the supersymmetry, eigenvalue can run to infinity. There is a flat direction. Mm-hmm. And at large n, it can be really stabilized. But at finite n, it's
right.
Just metastable.
Right.
So we have to choose this state.
So that's our initial condition.
Ah, yes. And of course, by choosing the initial condition properly, we can even have a gas of D brains, which is far from black hole. And also, as I just said, we can imagine that from the bunch, one of the eigenvalue escape and rolls to infinity. This is analogous to evaporation of black hole. I will make the meaning more precise shortly. Okay, so in this sense, this matrix model describes not just black hole, but also gas or evaporation of black hole or many things. By observing time evolution of this system, we can even learn evaporation.
When you set an eigenvalue goes off to infinity, that means that as you increase the time, its value gets larger?
Yes. And that happens not just in real-time simulation, but in Monte Carlo. Imaginary time Monte Carlo simulation as a if you go large Monte Carlo time, then often you can see such behavior. And now we solve the classical equation of motion. So we forget about fermion. Okay, this is a Lagrangian. The equation of motion is just this, highly nonlinear. And here I took gauge field A is in this covariant derivative. But I take A equal to 0 gauge, then you will have the so-called Gauss's law constraint. Okay, we should solve these two equations simultaneously. And we discretize it and solve it. And it takes only 15 to 30 minutes for average grad students to write the C or Fortran code. And actually, it took 30 minutes for me, so maybe I'm less than average, but because I thought. But anyways, also several Stanford students tried, and this is based on actual measurement. And if you want to write a Monte Carlo simulation code for thermodynamics, you know, then it takes much longer, so it's much
good.
I'll explain that. So in this slide. So this is a continuum equation of motion. And we discretize it. So here, dt is small. This is a time step. Then xi of t plus dt should be xi of t plus vi of t times dt. And if you take into account the second derivative, you will have this term. And we do the same thing. But here, we adjust the higher order term this way. Then, after 5 minutes calculation, you can confirm that if at time t, Gauss's law constraint is satisfied, then at time t plus dt, with this regularization, Gauss's law constraint is still satisfied. So we use this constraint, discretization, and choose initial condition to satisfy Gauss's law constraint. Then at later time, Gauss's law constraint is exactly satisfied. Of course, up to numerical error.
You have conserved quantity?
Here, angular momentum, energy, and so on, a lot.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, energy is approximately conserved, and if we go to continuum limit, then it is in the continuum limit, it's exactly conserved. And so with this discretization, Gauss's law constraint is preserved, but energy and angular momentum are approximately conserved. But of course, we check that by changing dt, we can really check that violation is very small and negligible.
When you discretize, the first thing you do is to test that the energy is conserved.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
thing. And this equation of motion has a very funny property. And so if you rescale time and matrix this way by using the same parameter alpha, the equation of motion doesn't change. So by this rescaling, you have a factor alpha cube. And here you have 1x and 2 inverse of t. Then you again have alpha cube. So equation of motion doesn't change. But with this rescaling, energy and temperature changes this way. So in classical matrix model, different energy or different temperature are actually all equivalent. We can just set temperature and energy is related this way. And this temperature can be set to 1 by using this trivial scaling symmetry. So we just study t equals to 1 case. And the same result holds for any other temperature. And we can find the temperature dependence just by using this trivial scaling. This temperature? So what we we are solving a real-time equation of motion, or we are using microcanonical ensemble. So actually, there is no notion of t, right? But at large n, of course, we know how to relate t and temperature and energy in a canonical ensemble. And the relation is this. So energy, temperature is energy per degrees of freedom, basically. And here we use equipartition and virial theorem to relate temperature to total energy. And in at large n, in canonical ensemble, this is the exact relation. And in order to see the formation and the thermalization of black hole, what we need is the fact that this system is chaotic. And of course, you know, interaction is highly nonlinear, so it's easy to imagine it's chaotic. And almost all initial conditions end up with the typical matrix configuration because this system is chaotic. Then what is a typical configuration? We can find, we can determine typical configuration just by entropy argument. And if you have a bunch of eigenvalues, then open string can be excited. In terms of matrix, all n squared component can be excited. So we have n squared degrees of freedom, so entropy should be n squared. But if you have gas of the zero grain, then off-diagonal element cannot be excited. Because open string is very long, then it's very heavy, then they cannot be excited. So essentially, we only have n degrees of freedom, which are position of the zero grains, so entropy is m. So such configuration should be highly suppressed compared to black hole. So we end up with a black hole. And we can really see that if we, for example, if we see the collision of two bunches of black zero grains, which can be described by block diagonal configuration, with a slight, very small seed of off diagonal interaction. Then at late time, we can see that single bunch of eigenvalue is formed. And if we go to larger n, we can really see that at large n, it's something like thermodynamic limit here. Then we can really see that the t dependence at late time disappears if we go to larger n. And also, SO, there are nine matrices, and there is a SO9 rotational symmetry, which rotates the indices of these matrices, and which, of course, has the interpretation in the gravity side. Of course, this is a rotational symmetry of R9. And that SO9 rotational symmetry emerges at late time. So initial condition completely breaks SO9 symmetry, but at late time, SO9 emerges. But SO9 symmetry can be seen if we look at such single trace quantity or distribution of eigenvalues. If we look at all the detail of the matrices, actually T dependence never disappears. So microstate, so explicit values of matrices are analogous to microstate of black hole, and they are highly T dependent, and even at large n, there are many states, but if we see macroscopic quantity, we cannot distinguish a detail.
How do you set up the initial state here? I'm trying to envisage what you do.
For example, so x1 is taken to be block diagonal, and v1 to be some velocity times 1, some velocity times minus velocity times 1, and the v equals 0, and x2 0. But then, of course, if we really take this configuration, then off-diagonal block never get excited. So we introduce very small non-zero seed of interaction here. and infinitely small c is fine after a long time of the element to become bigger. So if without offline elements, they just pass through. Oh, just by changing t to minus t. Very good. That's actually related to evaporation. But so what I can say here is most, almost all initial conditions end up with the black hole. Of course, we can fine tune the value of matrices so that it does not end up in black hole.
Even if the velocity is not driving, you end up with.
Ah, okay, okay. You mean first set v equals to zero? Or?
V equals finite, but the position is the other way around.
Ah, something like this. Ah, then off-diagonal, if we have big enough off-diagonal element, then it will be pulled back and collide. Yeah.
From gravity.
By off-diagonal element.
So
if you look at this equation of motion, here, from here, attractive force appears. And if the velocity is not big enough, then they are pulled back. And the interaction, big interaction appears when off-diagonal element is big. And if velocity is too big, then you know off-diagonal element cannot grow and just disappear and it can go far away. But if velocity is not big enough, then growth of the off-diagonal element can beat that. And then velocity changes the sign and then collision takes place and the black hole is formed.
Now without fermions, you don't have any flat directions left.
Without fermion, no.
So, in what sense can you talk about black holes?
Actually, that's the second half of this part, so please wait a little bit. Okay, so now we want to see the detail, more detail about the summarization. And we want, especially we want to consider fast scrambling. So suppose we take a microstate X and V from a thermalized black hole. So it's a typical black hole configuration. Then we add a small perturbation to X and V. Then because this system is chaotic, small perturbation quickly becomes large. And this growth is exponentially fast. And this exponent is called the Lyapunov exponent. And the positive Lyapunov exponent is one of the characterizations of chaos. No. It may be, but we don't know. 0.293, I will explain. Close to 0.293. And then, so dx and dv grows very quickly. But at some point, growth stops. And that time should be log of entropy. In this case, log of n. According to Sekino and Susskind and Schenker Stanford and Maldacena Schenker Stanford. But their calculation is in a gravity side.
But it depends on the H-bar.
I've explained that point. So in classical theory, and also in classical theory, what is H-bar? That's another question. And here we perturbed X and V, and saw how it grows. So here n equals to 6, 8, 12, and 16 has been studied. And so this is log plot. So dx, I didn't write down the definition But Vx, normal Vx is a square root of trace of Vx squared. It really grows exponentially. And from this slope, we can determine Lyapunov exponent firstly. Then for different values of n, we can measure the Lyapunov exponent. And it seems to have a well-defined Lagrangian limit,
0.293. This is
at
temperature 1?
Temperature 1, yes.
There's supposed to be this universal number, which is 2 pi t. That's not.
That's a strong coupling limit. And I will explain the relation to strong coupling limit shortly. And it can grow all the way up to square root n, because if dx becomes too large, okay, configuration before and after perturbations are almost independent. So you can just pick up two typical configurations randomly. Then according to two-fifth counting, such quantity should be square root n, if you use this definition. And so exponential, if perturbation is of order 1, then it grows to of order square root n. Then exponential of Lyapunov exponent times scrambling time is square root n. Then Ts is log n divided by lambda l. But lambda l is of order 1, so it's log n.
So the justification for classical dynamics is it's weak coupling or something?
Yes.
So is there a strange factor here at the game?
I don't think so. So
it's classical, but fairly practical. It's something like a strange factor.
Well, like, yeah,
it's true.
Strange attractors are just participating. These are phase space volume conservation. Attractors imply that the volume of phase space.
And I said perturbation is about 1, but of course classically we can take whatever small perturbation we want. But of course, we want to know about quantum theory. And then smallest size of the wave packet is h bar. And independence is n to the 0. Then it can grow all the way up to square root n. And this is why we use this relation. And the H-bar dependence should be reproduced if you correctly related to quantum mechanics, I think. I didn't prepare on the slide. If you're interested in after the talk, we can chat about that. And if you want to know the temperature dependence, as I say, the temperature dependence in classical theory is very trivial, okay, this scaling. And of course, if you rescale time, then the Lyapunov exponent changes accordingly. But that rescaling is related to rescaling of temperature. So this power appears. And from dimensional reason, we have to supplement the two-fifth coupling here. Yes. This digit may change slightly. And Joe just mentioned the Mardasena-Schenker-Stanford bound. Okay, so they say that in gravitational theory, the Lyapunov exponent is 2 pi t. And they also say that's the biggest value. And if you take into account alpha prime correction, it should decrease. And our result can be written this way, by using dimensionless two-fifth coupling. Okay, and their result should correspond to lambda effective equals to infinity. And our result should be valid when lambda effective is close to zero. So if we write Lyapunov exponent to be some function of lambda effective times t, then this f of lambda should be 2 pi at a strong coupling and should decrease. This is what Maladacena, Schenker, and Stanford claimed. And our classical calculation suggests that close to lambda equals to zero, this function is lambda effective to the 1/4. And we know that there is no phase transition in between, but of course we don't know how they are interpolated. But at least our result is consistent with their calculation, and also tells us that there is no explicit energy dependence here. There is a well-defined Lagrange limit, even at weak coupling. And we can further go to Lyapunov spectrum by looking at the more detail of the scrambling process. So this is an equation of motion. I just rewrote the equation of motion in a slightly different manner. But then this, so this is a vector in a phase space, and this describes infinitesimal time evolution. But by integrating it, we can write a transform matrix which maps perturbation at time t to perturbation at time t prime. Okay. And of course, if we take t prime to be t plus infinitesimally small time interval, then this becomes like this. Just by taking product of such infinitesimal transform matrix, we can numerically calculate finite time transform matrix. And by calculating singular values of this u, we can calculate the growth rate exponential of lambda l times t prime minus t. But there are really, really many modes. And actually, there are 16 times n squared minus 1 physical mode. And half of them grows. And what we saw previously is just the largest Lyapunov exponent. And we want to know the full Lyapunov spectrum. And strictly speaking, the Lyapunov spectrum or the Lyapunov exponent is defined at infinitely long time interval. And at finite time, it can have time dependence. And if we take time difference to zero, then we obtain so-called local Lyapunov exponent, which describes instantaneous growth rate. And our first guess was, at large n, exponent is not really t dependent. And the local exponent and the usual Lyapunov exponent are the same. That was our first guess. But good. So we studied several different initial configurations. So in that sense, we took ensemble average. This M and N. Okay, so this is 1 to 9. So there are 9 matrices. And 9, V is X dot, so there are 9 velocity matrices and 9 position matrices. N by N. And there are 9 X's, because there are 9 special dimensions. So actually, this M runs from 1 to 9, and it has these matrix indices which runs from 1 to n, and we have dx and dv. So this dx dv actually has 18 times n squared components. But u1 part is trivial. So you project out u1 part. And also 2 out of this 18 are gauge part, which, for example, which does not, one of 18 does not satisfy Gauss's law constraint, so we should project them out. And the other one, another one of 18, can be removed by residual gauge symmetry. And we just keep 16 physical mode. So strictly speaking, this U is 18 n squared times 18 n squared matrices. But we we multiply projection matrices, which reduces the size to 16 times n squared minus 1. Then calculate singular values. That's what we did. Yes. Yes.
Look at the local one, not the long time
one. Both. And actually, long time one is very hard.
Yeah,
so we couldn't really take the long time limit. And anyways, our first guess was that local exponent and the large, long time exponents should be the same one. By just calculating local ones, we can save the computational resource. And it was a surprise. So this is a distribution of local spectrum. Okay, for n equal to 3, 4, 6, and 8. So 3 is this, 4, and 6 and 8 are almost indistinguishable. And largest local exponent is almost 10. But largest global exponent was 0.29 here. And there's a huge difference. And what's the reason? And actually, it's very simple. So there was this M in a transform matrix. So this M is the only part where configuration X explicitly appear. But this operator is a background, depend on background matrix X. Okay? And this X is, of course, time dependent. So this operator changes very quickly. Then this one, so this U depend on X through here. Then, of course, at each time to some direction, it's very quickly growing. And the growth rate is actually huge. But as time goes by, background matrix changes. Then growing direction changes. So suppose at time t equals to 0, we chose the direction, fastest growing direction. After some time, it can be a shrinking direction. And then after some time, it again becomes growing direction, and so on. So there is a very complicated cancellation. And then, because of that cancellation, after a long time, large exponent is actually suppressed. So local exponent is much larger than actual long-time Lyapunov exponent because of this cancellation. And then it's actually, I don't really know why cancellation does not completely make Lyapunov exponent to be zero. So tiny part survives somehow. So if Xm moved even faster, then exponent could be zero. But somehow it remains. So if we plot the exponent as a function of time for fixed n, then t equals to 0 is that local exponent. And t equals to 2, 5, 10, and 20. Gradually, spectrum shifts to smaller lambda region because of that cancellation. And also, if you see fixed t and different n, then you can see that this spectrum has a very nice large n convergence. So n equals to 3 is pretty much different from others. And n equals to 4, 6, and 8 looks pretty much the same. And if you see the n equals to 8, t equals to 20, then actually it can be very nicely fit by this simple ansatz. Lambda max is the largest Lyapunov exponent. And this gamma is very close to 0.5. And if it were lambda square, then it's a semicircle row. And it's something like semicircle row. And I think there must be some random matrix derivation of this behavior.
But there was still a strong coupling, and therefore, through the fermions, I would see these flat directions coming back, and I presume it would naturally boost the Lyapunov exponent up.
That's not really, because if eigenvalue rose to infinity, then it's just a free theory. It's not really chaotic. And so that perturbation is confined to small, very highly non-perturbative region is important.
So you separate the eigenvalue, the orthogonal modes and combine them back, so they are not focused.
And at very early time, this fitting ansatz doesn't work anymore. But at least after t equals to 10, this ansatz can really nicely work with gamma equals to 0.5. And this lambda max decreases with time.
Mm-hmm.
No. So this is a distribution of Lyapunov exponent, okay? And the integral with respect to lambda is 1. That is the normalization.
No. I don't mean that. I'm asking that you're writing down some function mm-hmm. to the power of lambda e divided by n.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So you have to do this fitting. One good thing that you can do the fitting only when t is order log n. You can't do, the time should be order log n.
Probably you have a different derivation in mind, this one. And the derivation we used is slightly different, and we don't have to wait such a long time. But actually, there is another reason which forced us to go to very large t. And it's probably it's a complicated thing, and other people will not understand, so maybe we can talk later, I think.
Yeah, so in what time t parametrically in n, we expect this exponential
because we are fitting to the exponential. So t is in this classical calculation, n doesn't matter, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's always exponential, respectively.
Because the definition of the Lyapunov exponent in classical theory is you take perturbation to be as small as, so you take the limit where perturbation is really zero.
So that you do sometimes in immersion.
Yeah. Or if you look at this, transfer matrix, even if you multiply 1 by n to this vector, singular value doesn't change. At classical level, there's no way to see n. And in gravity, so what we can learn from this is that in I didn't completely check their logic, but Steve Schenker and Douglas Sanford claimed that in the strong coupling limit in supergravity, spectrum is delta function-like. But now we know that that weak coupling is spread out. So alpha prime correction should change the spectrum. OK, so this delta function like spectrum spreads as string effect comes in. And I said that here we could see straight line behavior in log plot, and we can calculate the Lyapunov exponent here. But actually, in this region, okay, even at t equals to 20, largest Lyapunov exponent was 0.4. But actually, this slope is 0.29. And why can't we see the straight line behavior here? because you know, still the epsilon exponent is still changing at t equals to 20. And actually, there is a reason which we noticed after calculating the spectrum. And we actually had to modify the way to calculate the epsilon exponent because of this fact. So this is a plot of largest epsilon exponent. And at the time t equals to 20, it's still 0.4. But we could see straight line behavior with slope 0.3. Actually, not just after a long time, only largest Lyapunov exponent contribute. It becomes dominant. But at the finite time, of course, the smaller values can still contribute. And if we take average of, if we take into account the contribution from smaller exponent and take kind of average, then actually it quickly converges to 0.3. So we shouldn't just fit this straight line behavior because it actually includes a contribution from smaller exponent. And actually we used some better method, which is called Sprott algorithm. And actually t equals to, you know, 60, well, t equals to 60 in this plot is actually not good enough to single out the largest Lyapunov exponent. So we went t bigger than 1,000. Then this, you know, then this is a, this plot is made by looking at t larger than 1,000, and somehow late time value is exactly this value. I mean this slope. I don't know why that happened. Maybe just a coincidence, or maybe there's some deep reason. Okay, so it's already another pass, so we have to finish quickly. But anyway, so in Maldacena Schenker and the Stanford paper, they calculated the Lyapunov exponent by using a commutator squared correlation function. And we tried the same thing too in classical theory. And the commutator in quantum mechanics should be replaced with the Poisson bracket in classical mechanics. And this is the result. And we see the exponential growth with the same slope. And another pass, so should I skip these things?
How much time do you need?
I don't know. If I explain everything, it may take 30 minutes. So probably I skip this part. I just wanted to say, even with the UV catastrophe problem, classical Yamil simulation in non-zero spatial dimension can make sense. And if you're interested in, I can explain it later. And people in Santa Barbara are interested in black hole evaporation, I think. So I want to tell you that black hole evaporation might be accessed by using the classical simulation plus zeroth order approximation to quantum theory. So what I claim is that chaos plus flood direction leads to black hole evaporation. So we have black hole, whose entropy is n squared. And we have gas of deep brains, whose entropy is n. Of course, it's exponentially suppressed. But if we wait long enough, it should appear. And I say the entropy is n squared under n. But actually, once it becomes gas, then these particles can move anywhere in the infinite volume space. So we have infinite spatial volume factor. So once eigenvalue run away, then it will never come back. So in that sense, if we have chaos plus flood direction, then evaporation should be described. And of course, what actually happened is we have a bound state of n squared d-brains. Then one of the d-brain is empty. The entropy of such a state is n squared. Entropy of this state is n minus 1 squared. Because in terms of matrix, this one is something like a highly non-commutative block of size n minus 1 squared. And some non-zero value here, which describes position of nth d-brain, and almost zero value in these low-end columns. And so emission rate should be exponentially suppressed with n. And in the large n limit, it's zero. And of course, this is different from the emission of massless particle, in the sense the zero brain here is very heavy. Its mass is of order n. However, the same mechanism would work for light particles at very low temperature, M-theory region. Anyways, in the end, if we admit the BFSS conjecture, then these eigenvalues should be the building block of various extended object, or even graviton. Then graviton should be emission of graviton should be described by emission of several eigenvalues. And if we have quantum chaos and flood direction in that parameter region, we should see something similar. And we want to confirm this very simple scenario by using classical calculation. So here Xm is off-diagonal part, which describes the zero brain, plus small off-diagonal elements, which describes open strings. Then if we calculate Xm squared, here m is summed from 1 to 9, the eigenvalue of this matrix should be radial coordinate of d0, approximately. And I will call largest eigenvalue of this matrix as r squared. Then if we consider three matrix model, in d0 brain matrix model, we have 9 matrices. But for simplicity, let's consider three matrix model, which is whose action is the same, except that number of matrices is now 3. And let's take n equals to 3. Then if we plot r squared as a function of t, then sometimes it rose to very large value. And I would say this is the emission of the zero brain. And even in d equals to 9 case, similar instability can be seen, though it's more suppressed. And if we see the histogram of r, which is the position of d brain coming out of the black hole, then with the zero brain matrix model, with n equals to 4, its distribution is like this. Oh, this histogram is not properly normalized. It's just a number of points in each beam. And if you zoom up here, actually, we can see exponential damping. So this is a plot of n equals to 3, 4, to 8. And at the tail, we can see clear exponential decay. And the tail behaves like exponential minus d minus 1 times n times r. And at large n, it's suppressed. And I can give a simple derivation for this, but I don't have time, so I skip it. Then what is the consequence of this? OK, so this part is a d0 brain, which I call Bob. And Bob wants to escape from black hole to meet Alice. And he can really go very far, OK, like this. But actually, flood direction in classical theory is not flat enough. In the end, always he is pushed back to the black hole. OK, like so. So it's if you take this block to be exactly zero, then Bob can go to infinity far from black hole. But as long as this is slightly different from zero, always he's pushed back. But this is just the artifact of the classical treatment. And by taking into account the quantum effect, you can really see black hole evaporate. And the wrong thing was that when this the zero brain goes far away from black hole, which is a bunch of other D brains, then open string between them becomes very heavy. But of course, the classical approximation is good only when mass of the black hole, or in a mass of open string, is much smaller than temperature. Well, in other words, this open string in matrix model can approximately be described by harmonic oscillator. And h nu of that harmonic oscillator is mass of the brain, open string. But this h nu becomes very large. It's proportional to the distance. And only when h nu is smaller than kb, Boltzmann constant times temperature, classical approximation is OK. So if this deep brain goes too far from black hole, we have to take into account the quantum effect. Oh, I already explained this part, sorry. But then if eigenvalue is, if separation is very big, then we can use one loop approximation to estimate quantum effect. And actually, for, several people, for example, Simon Cattrall and Toby Weissman, calculated such effect. And essentially, fermionic contribution almost exactly cancel bosonic contribution. So potential just disappear. Then by taking into account that fact, the simplest effective model is this. So inside some threshold value, we use classical matrix model. But once eigenvalue go beyond this threshold, then we just turn off off-diagonal element. Then that D0 brain just freely propagate. And we can make such model respecting gauge invariance. If you're interested, then I can explain later. So then in a, with such crude approximation, this black hole really evaporate. And then if you start with some random eigenvalue distribution inside this region, then first they form black hole, because it's not just a classical theory, unless eigenvalue go out of this region. Then eventually the particle is emitted one by one and completely disappear. In that way, such a simple classical model can describe, can mimic the formation and the evaporation of the black hole. And there may be many future directions. And we can study more on the thermalization and the scrambling processes. And especially one by n correction should be interesting from string theory point of view. And also, classical approximation is valid only in weak coupling limit, but it should be possible to take into account quantum effect perturbatively at small lambda. And by borrowing technology from QGP industry, it would be possible to do such things. And also, if we can mimic emission of massless particle in such simple framework or slightly improved version, then it might be possible to say something about information puzzle. And I skipped this part, but Yang-Mills theory with non-zero spatial dimension can be studied classically, and UV catastrophe is not really a problem in such a kind of study. Then we can see the summarization in this case. It should be different from a matrix model because now we have a spatial dimension. And also, in such a model, we can see phase transition, which, for example, corresponds to starting with black string, it pinched off and formed black hole. Then in classical Yang-Mills theory, we can see time evolution, which corresponds to such process. And then because classical Yang-Mills theory knows the stringy correction to the supergravity, maybe it's useful to understand the string effect and the singularity. You know, string effect should resolve the singularity. And we can see just alpha prime correction is fine, or maybe we have to go to finite N or finite GS. We can see test several scenarios using this framework. And more. This is the final slide. Thanks.
We have time maybe for a couple of questions as well.
related to your last slide. So if I go to non-zero spatial dimensions, of course, there are transitions between weak and strong coupling. So in what sense can I neglect the fermions in that case?
First of all, so what you have in mind is beta, and so what you have in mind is 1 plus 1 dimensional theory, I think. And this L is, so we consider one plus one dimensional theory on a spatial circle. And if we change, we can change the size of the circle L and the temperature T. And low temperature limit is described by supergravity. And then there is a phase transition somewhere here, which separate the black string phase and black core phase, I think. And this goes like this. I forgot the detail of the shape, but at low temperature, still there is a corresponding at high temperature, there is a remnant of the phase transition here, I think. And here it's of a first order, and may people suspect that here somehow phase transition split to two, and you have a second and third phase transition or something like that. People say. I'm not really sure about that point, but still, at least there is a remnant of black hole black transition at the weak coupling region, and we have access to that here. And there is no phase transition like this. This region, black string region, at high temperature and low temperature are connected with that phase transition. And the black string region at low temperature and high temperature are smoothly connected.
So there's a critical endpoint on that line.
No critical endpoint should.
Okay, space transition in large n.
Large n, yes. Otherwise, it's a finite volume system, so.